How would you explain English or plain language? Plain English is the old-fashioned term. Obviously, it really only refers to the English language, and therefore it's been updated to plain language to incorporate any other language that might want to, you know, incorporate and take on these sort of basic principles of writing and presentation. Plain English proper is a movement that was championed by many people around the world, but in particular those people in the United Kingdom and its colonies, including New Zealand and Australia. The movement seems sort of fundamental. That is, it's a well-known fact that there's a lot of jargon out there in the workplace and in government and in industry. Not only is there jargon, but there's legalese, there's some of these sometimes awfully convoluted and unnecessarily complicated sentence constructions. And these are found in lots and lots and lots of public documents and forms such as taxation forms, applications for passports, contracts, wills, government policies, company policies. So much so that ordinary people like you and me, that is non-lawyers, non-politicians, non-policy makers, can't really understand these documents. They have to be interpreted for us by a professional of, a particular profession or organisation. You need a lawyer to interpret the contract. You need a special person to explain what's going on in this particular government form, for example. Now, what people have realised, and you know, most companies and most government departments, is that if their documents are convoluted and illegibly incomprehensible, then they're going to need to employ other people to explain them to you and me. That costs money, that costs time, and it's actually very, very inefficient. Above all, the plain English movement respects the reader and not the document itself. Right? So there's no respect given to the document. It's the reader, the audience, who is all important. Plain English or plain language makes information accessible to more people rather than less people, or so they say, because there is a debate and there has always been criticism of plain English, as you shall see. Now, in terms of the history of plain English, from what I can discover, the origin of plain English began basically with an English activist by the name of Chrissy Maher. Why do they have a word for you? Chrissy Maher. Chrissy Maher, in the early 1970s, lobbied the British government to reform the wording of complicated forms in British life. She was outraged at this lack of progress when she lobbied the government. That is, her entreaties fell on deaf ears, basically. No one was helping her. No one came along and said, oh yes, you're right, Chrissy, we'll change our government forms. So what she did was she took a different tack in the early 70s. She launched what was called the Plain English Campaign by shredding what she called gobbledygook on the steps of Parliament Square in Westminster at the time. That is, she created a public nuisance of herself. A passing policeman reads out the entire riot act to her, because, you know, she's not supposed to do this, shredding gobbledygook, and is infamously asked, does that gobbledygook mean we have to go? A bit later, dressed as the gobbledygook monster, Chrissy delivers the first issue of the Plain English magazine to 10 Downing Street, the office of the Prime Minister at the time. Now, obviously, this particular campaign, this one person, her ideas spread quite quickly. And by creating a public nuisance of herself, by getting the media attention, she became instrumental in publicising the fact that, you know, there were all these totally incomprehensible forms and, ideas, mainly, you know, pieces of paper that were being given out by the government to unsuspecting citizens who just looked at the thing entirely, you know, aghast, saying, what does this mean? In 1980, the Plain English Campaign launched a professional editing service to provide enough funding to keep itself entirely independent of anyone else. The very first Plain English Awards saw six organisations rewarded for their use of Plain English, and guess what? 100 organisations got a booby prize for gobbledygook, or the first golden bulls. In 1981, the government responded to the Plain English Campaign by setting up a review under Sir Derek Rayner. With the campaign's help, the review rewrote 58,000 forms, making immediate savings of what was said to be £15 million at the time. So, with this sort of, you know, public advocacy, with this sort of government, you know, saving, I mean, £15 million from rewriting a few forms, and maybe a few thousand forms, people started to realise, hey, this is important stuff. There's a merit here. Maybe we should follow suit. In 1983, the Plain English Campaign published what was called the small print. That was a report on the gobbledygook used in contracts. The report included several examples of how contracts can be rewritten in plain English. Gobbledygook was the campaign's first published collection of waffle. The Cabinet Office then distributed 1,700 copies of The Word Is, plain English. That is a small little guide or brochure, which was a guide for clear writing to civil servants. In 1987, Plain English had become so successful throughout the civil service that the campaign introduced the Inside Right Award, given solely for internal government communications. A new set of materials, that is the Plain English course, allowed companies to train themselves in Plain English for the first time. By its 10th anniversary, Plain English Campaign is being consulted by the majority of major organisations in England. Plain English Campaign is now the largest plain language group, one of the largest plain language groups in the world, with over 30 full-time staff and with offices in the United States and also in Africa. That's a bit of the history of Plain English and where it started. It started in England, obviously. But it moved from about 1983 over to Australia. In Australia, the plain English movement was seized upon by a great deal of enthusiasm. And it was basically spearheaded in Australia by Professor Robert D. Eggleston, linguist and professor of linguistics at the University of Sydney. I have his book called Writing in Plain English, which I purchased at the time. I think it's still available from the Australian Government Publishing Service. It was about $16, probably about $20 or so now. Very, very useful document. In 1983, the Australian government itself launched the Plain English and Simpler Forms program in order to simplify a dizzying array of public service documents using the same sort of model imported from Britain. The movement spread to other kinds of documents, especially legal documents, with some success, but also some degree of resentment. The obvious argument was that the reason the legal profession can charge such high fees and is regarded as professional is precisely because the legal profession utilises intentionally obscure language, this is me, not them, which only they themselves can decipher. If they are using this intentionally obscure language, then they're the only ones who can be, you know, grant access to the language. They're the only ones who can understand it. And therefore, you have to pay a lawyer or a solicitor large sums of money in order to get your contracts drawn up and signed. That's my point of view. I've never actually seen that one written. Yep. Go ahead. Yeah, that's what they all say. They all say it's the law and it's the concept which is so difficult to understand. And, you know, that's one of the criticisms of, that is definitely one of the criticisms of plain English. Now, I'm throwing this one open, all right? I'm not saying this is the case or this is the case, but some people have said this, I've said this, I can retract my statement, but let's move on, okay? According to Eggleston, in 1990, in his 1990 federally funded monograph, plain English can be used in the following places. Pamphlets, questionnaires, forms, manuals, letters, memos, acts of parliament, minutes of meetings, instructions, job applications, leases, tenders, proposals, submissions, regulations, contracts, wills, and ministerial correspondence. Right, quite a bit of public life can be changed and bettered and improved, according to Eggleston, by plain English. One of the very first documents to be translated into plain English was the NRMA, Plain English Insurance Policy of 1976. Some of the unexpected benefits of the policy were things like greater productivity, less wastage of employees' time, decreased staff training times, clearer information, and less questions needed to be answered by senior staff members. The Victorian government reportedly saved $400,000 merely by rewriting just one cumbersome document at the time. It's a different document. The Victorian government, using a different document, supposedly saved $400K by rewriting just one document. Staff salaries obviously the main saving here. That is, these staff can be redeployed to more useful tasks than explaining a silly document. So you take 8 or 10 staff members away from answering the telephone and answering letters and redeploy them somewhere else, and you save yourself $400,000. Cost savings in the UK are even more astronomical than these. Figures like £900,000, awful lot of money, being saved in 1 year for a one-off cost of, let's say, £24,000 to rewrite the actual document itself. Obviously, it's a long document. So, you know, governments are seizing upon this as a way of cost-cutting, and it's become very, very popular. It's something to think about, and I'm certainly an advocate, but also a careful advocate of plain English. There are no secrets to the plain English approach, just some common sense ideas that some of you, anyway, should be aware of by now. You know, things like purpose, an audience, organisation, language choice, design, and lots and lots and lots of revision. And I should add, lots of testing, lots of usability testing of the document, maybe doing some comprehension tests with the intended audience. That's something that I've actually added myself, but from what I've read anyway, people weren't doing it at the time. That is, it's not just you writing a plain English document for your intended audience. It's you writing it, then testing it, then going back to the drawing board and changing it, modifying it, so it makes even more sense. I would be the first one to say that, you know, you don't know the pitfalls of these documents. You don't know them, not all of them. It would be very, very arrogant for anyone to say, you know, I can write the perfect plain English document, I don't need anyone to help me. It's almost a team effort, because you need your audience, you need your readers to help you, to give you good feedback. And I would also add, that's one of the keys to writing good professional newsletters and brochures and reports. Getting feedback off other people. It's not cheating. It's not, playing unfair. It's actually, you know, a very, very sensible thing that many, many people forget to do. You know, I haven't had enough time to test my document. I haven't had enough time to get feedback from this newsletter or brochure that I've just created, right? Okay, you get my feedback. Instead, you get my analysis. Make sure that you leave yourself enough time, that if you have to, you know, create the thing ahead of time, you can't just wait for the last minute. Some people were saying to me, you know, on Sunday, when's the deadline? I mean, what's the very last hour? What's the very last minute I can put this thing in on? Seems to me that they haven't been doing their usability testing, because they haven't actually been doing the newsletter. So obviously those particular assignments, they fall down. They don't rate it as highly as the ones that, you know, are done ahead of time, maybe a little bit ahead of time. You go out, you give it to people, you show people, and they give you some comments. It's not very hard in a school like this where everyone wants to be fairly critical. Plain common sense to me. Strangely enough, all the books that I've seen which talk about technical writing from this period in time as well, from the 70s and 80s, they all seem to stress the same kinds of sentiments. That is, be true to your audience. They are the ones who matter. Make sure that what you write is appropriate for a specific audience. Then you've done your job well. Anson, the guru of technical writing, says pretty much the same thing. Jacob Nielsen says the same thing when he talks about usability on his usability website. Wim Horton, the guru of online documentation and now online trading, says the same thing as well. And even, you know, Joseph M. Williams, the guys whose exercises we have been using for style and writing basic paragraphs and editing our own writing, he says exactly the same stuff. That is, you know, it's your audience who is important. You need to design your document, you need to design your paragraphs and your sentences to get, you know, what you want to say across effectively. I should be saying the same thing all the time. Now, let's have a look at an example. Kenman suggests that just because something is easier to comprehend and easier and more efficient to read doesn't necessarily make it an easier document. And she tests this using particularly difficult concepts that come out of her research. That is, the concepts themselves are difficult. And what she says is that using the famous NRMA model, she maintains that it's not the amount of jargon or the length of the sentences or the use of the active voice that's the most important thing. She claims that it's the concepts themselves which are difficult, and unless you explain those concepts quite fully, either in the document or, you know, in endnotes or column notes beside the document, then you're still up against this problem of, you know, people not understanding fully what it is that you're talking about. She concludes that plain English per se is not the answer to everyone's prayers. She says that it was basic insurance concepts themselves which gave her subjects the most trouble. That is, plain English by itself didn't really help at all, even though it's commonly accepted by everybody nowadays that plain English is the way forward. Kevin argues that it's probably too simplistic just to fix up a few bad words in a document or to shorten those sentences. She says that whilst the readability and the readability index might change and become, you know, lower and more usable, you still get problems with comprehension of concepts. Now, I don't think she's really criticising plain English as a movement. She's just saying, hang on, there's more to it than this. I think also that she's misinterpreted plain English itself, because, you know, plain English obviously can take on board these concepts and also use them. There's nothing to say that a plain English editor or a plain English author can't use her method of explaining concepts more fully and classify it as plain English. That is, there's no such thing as a definition of plain English. It's another problem. When the conference paper she gave was finished at the end of her presentation, a very senior academic, very much into plain English from New Zealand, had a go at her and said, well, you know, Robin, she said, basically, you're using some documents here, and you're testing a plain English document with your own document, where you explain more concepts, And she said, obviously the first document wasn't really plain English. Hang on a minute, you know. Okay then, what's the definition of plain English? If the first document wasn't plain English, and the NRMA had maintained it was, the second one was plain English, was more plain English than the second one, than the first one. What's the definition of plain English? Well, obviously the definition is plain English is the one that's the most easily understood. Can you see how that's almost like a circular argument? That you can't say, well, this is not real plain English because you can't really understand it. The one I'm giving you is the one you can understand. That one has to be plain English. That is, there seems to be something wrong with the entire movement, which is based upon, you know, the outcome. And the outcome is, oh, I understand. It's efficiency. As a concept itself, plain English falls down in that regard. That doesn't mean necessarily that we throw away plain English. It doesn't mean necessarily that we ignore it. I think we have to be aware of this fact and, you know, use it where necessary. Shorten those sentences, you know, change the passives into actives where it is appropriate. Maybe what we should be doing is not necessarily, becoming one of these fierce advocates of plain language and plain English, like do exist out there in the real world. I remember at this particular conference, the presentation, it ended up in a bun fight, really, with these two academics basically having a go at each other because they couldn't come to terms, they couldn't understand each other on their own terms. One was saying, you know, plain English is great, and it's always great, and how dare you attack it? And Robin was saying, well, plain English isn't great all the time. Now, if you read the response to Robin Kemmer's work, you'll see that she hadn't actually done all of her research. There was empirical evidence, quite a lot of empirical evidence, which says plain English documents do work. You get massive increases, improvements in comprehension and memory by using these plain English documents. Kemmer said, No, there wasn't any empirical evidence. Well, there was. She just hadn't found it, that's all. One last comment, and that is from an experience I had with local government. And I work with a local government employee in order to basically stop a housing development which was going on near my house. There's a lot of units and apartments being built. Yeah, we're talking hundreds just down the end of my road. And I had, with a few other people, got together a resident action group. Now, one of the most interesting things that came out of this was that one of our members was a local government town planner, and he had all the statutes and all the information at his disposal and would write some messages to the public. When I read what he had wrote, I was utterly, utterly astounded at the fact it was in legalese, bureaucracy. I couldn't really understand it, not easily. I said to this guy, I said, look, we can't give this out to the public. I'll throw it in the bin. We can't give this out to the media as well, because they would just throw it away. I'll have to rewrite it for you. Do you mind? And he couldn't understand this. And he was just like an ordinary guy who lived in my suburb, but he worked for local government. And then it dawned upon me. I said to him, what do people write like in local government, in your department? He said, well, they write like me. I said, do you understand that? He said, yeah, I understand it. No problems at all. we all understand it. This is the language of my organisation. That is, bureaucracy was something that was quite common and used all the time. What people don't understand is that there are alternatives to this. Now, he didn't need this language. And again, his argument was, there are legal terms here. I have to stick by the spirit of the law. Well, I said, yeah, okay, fine. But, you know, what we need to do is make this knowledge understandable and accessible. Let's leave the law to the lawyers. Let's actually write this stuff so people can understand it. Which brings me to think, well, what happens if you are working for an organisation which uses this sort of language? What do? Do you try and change them? Do you change them to your way of thinking? Or do you leave it and try and write and try and, you know, work within their particular boundaries? That's something you're going to have to judge for yourself. Obviously, it's highly dependent upon your audience and its needs and what they understand. There's no easy answer here. Obviously, you have to play each one as it goes. Ideally, I'd like to say, yeah, okay, use the plain English, use the plain language. But then again, you know, it might be better for that organisation, for that department, for this group of people, to have the information given back to them in something that they are familiar with. That is, get away from the plain language, get away from the plain English, and write the gobbledygook for them. Okay, I'm going to leave it there.